You're listening to Cap and Company. See what Sparkles is up to on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today. Cap and Company.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Crosstalk brought to you by the Hawthorne Racecourse with sports betting on. Lockdown fans returning to America's original sport, horse racing. Download the Club Hawthorne app to wager on races from around the world at clubhawthorneapp.com. Thank you, Danny Zetterman. Thank you, Christopher Bleck. Thank you, Eddie Olchek, Mike Tannenbaum, Chuck Garfine. And that leads us to Crosstalk with the Carmen and Yurko Show. Hey, Carm, how are you, kid?
What up, Cappy? How are you?
Good. How are you, kid?
Good.
Did you hear what happened yesterday with someone betting at Bet Rivers?
No.
Okay, I'm going to read this because a guy like you is going to appreciate this in a big way. You're going to be like, are you kidding me? How about this? This is a release from Bet Rivers. A Chicago area bettor placed $4,000 on Colin Morikawa to lead after round one at 5,000 to 1.
Wow.
Won 204 grand. Gets better. He then bet $28,025.84 on Morikawa to finish top five. That paid another $238,000. He then bet at 28 to 1 another 10 grand on Morikawa to win the event outright.
God.
That paid him $290,000. He also had additional winning bets on UFC 251 and Spanish La Liga soccer and cashed in for the exact amount that Morikawa won for winning the tournament, $1.1 million.
That's pretty damn good. This is someone in Illinois, a Chicago bettor?
At BetRiversIllinois.com.
That's what's called a good weekend. I've never had a weekend like that, Kathy.
Yeah, me either, kid.
Oh, my God. And, yeah, I mean, yeah, Justin Thomas had a three-shot lead with, like, right, with three holes to go, I think, didn't he?
Correct.
That's unreal.
Yep.
Oh,
crazy.
God.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And I had my brother and I, my wife said, you know how I know I married a degenerate? I said, how? She goes, you've got a bet on MLS return to whatever, and you bet on NASCAR and golf. And we had Martin Truex.
There you go.
And he's leading going into the restart with two laps to go, and he lets a rookie go right by him on the outside. Goes, yeah, I just didn't see him.
That's gambling.
My God, he finished second.
Luckily, I've had a couple of NASCAR winners. I've never bet on NASCAR in my life, I don't think, up until...
You hit Ryan Blaney.
I hit Blaney, and then I had Denny Hamlin the next week. Yeah, 2 8-to-1 hits. I've never bet on NASCAR. And
neither.
I think I've made five bets on NASCAR since it came back almost every weekend.
So the kid that won it...
who is it? Do we
Cole
know
Custer.
Who it is?
Cole Custer. Oh, you mean the bettor?
Yeah.
It just says he is a Chicago area bettor.
We got to find who this guy is.
Yes, I want to get him on.
I'm putting that on Merkin today. All right, who the kid that won the NASCAR race, you mean?
The kid that won the NASCAR race, he's a rookie.
Yeah.
No rookie's ever won in Kentucky. The highest finish was sixth place by Eric Jones in 2016, I believe.
Hmm.
This guy was 250-1.
Nobody had that bet, right? I mean, who would bet that?
Nobody that I know of.
Of course not. I mean, like, you know, at least with Morikawa, you know, like he's good. That kid's going to win, man. He's going to win a lot. He was in a playoff just a couple of weeks ago. You know, but I don't know anything about NASCAR, to be honest. I've just been playing what the data says and what it suggests. And we got a little bit lucky maybe with a couple of hits that we did have. We gave out both of those on the odds couple, by the way. They both paid 8-to-1. But I mean, how do you come up with Cole Custer? What's his name?
Cole Custer.
I mean, Cole Custer.
One.
It's like, what? Black, Cole Custer? You like NASCAR. I mean, like.
Yeah, he's a rookie. I don't know
come
who
up
that
with
is.
That,
yeah.
Right? There's
yeah.
no way.
Yeah, no.
250-1. Like,
if you watch the end, the final lap was outrageous. There were guys going all over the place, 4 wide, 3 wide,
right.
Bump and grind,
crazy.
The whole thing.
It
was crazy.
That's nuts.
It was unbelievable. When they got I'm texting with my brother. I'm like, dude, we have the lead with two laps to go. It was either him or not Kevin Harvick. There was somebody else right there. Maybe Blaney. And all of a sudden, I see this other car coming on the high by the wall. I'm like, oh, don't let him through there. There he goes.
Unreal.
Over.
What happens to my futures bets, like if the NBA and the NHL seasons don't finish? You get that bet back, right?
You get the 100. If you bet the 100, you get the 100 back.
Yeah, whatever you bet, you get, you know, you get
like
it back.
I have the Washington Capitals still alive at 18-1.
Right, yeah, I have the Stars at 12-1.
Yeah.
I've got the Nuggets to win the West. That ain't happening, so I kind of hope it doesn't finish. Right. My hundo bet. No, I'll sacrifice my 100 for the benefit of everybody else to enjoy a resumption and completion of an NBA season.
Yeah,
I won't be that selfish.
I have the 100 on the Capitals that pays 18.04.
Nice. So, yeah, but we get that back, right?
Correct.
I'm starting to think we might get all these bets back, Cap. I don't know.
Why?
I don't know. I just, who the hell knows? Back and forth. I don't know. These players don't even feel like they're going to finish these seasons.
David Ross isn't even at camp today.
I know. Well, and they're just following the protocols, though, so good for them. He's like, Hey, why risk it? Okay, so I'm not at the Monday morning workout. What does he have to be there for? He's not a foot. They're not running. It's not training camp for football, for crying out loud, and he's waiting for the test results from Saturday, so I get it.
Put him up on a rooftop with a megaphone.
Yeah, that's what I would do, just binoculars and a megaphone. I mean, he could easily shout across the street in a megaphone.
Hey!
Right?
John! Follow through.
What does he need to be there for, even though? Right? I mean,
right.
A little morning workout, no big deal.
Unbelievable. So
this whole thing's crazy. I mean, it's just, you know.
I feel better about it today than I did when I left 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know, man.
Yes.
I don't know how I feel about it. But the players just don't, they're not instilling much confidence in the way they're talking about it. Most of them have doubts that they're even going to be able to finish. And you've got NFL guys. And I think from the NFL perspective right now, it's more about guys just sort of posturing because they don't have an official deal done, you know, with the league yet. And like Nate Solder's like, hey, who says there's going to be football? Aaron Rodgers. I think that could be more just posturing. But when you hear the way they're talking about,
like Kaner was when he was talking about
NHL. Yeah, kind of. Yes, exactly. It's almost the same thing. Don't you get that feeling that it's kind of the same thing? Where a big name star player comes out and he's like, whoa, who says we're playing?
Players Association says, hey, slow them down.
Yes, like we got to agree on a bunch of things. So like with the NFL, maybe we shouldn't be putting too much into Solder and Aaron Rodgers' comments, but I don't know at all. It just still kind of like bounces around in the back of my brain. Like, if these players don't feel confident about it, I mean, can they really pull this off? I don't know. The NBA bubble, bad optics again if like Joel Embiid, and I know he's mostly a playful, fun guy, but like he's tweeting a picture of what most people would look at and say, well, that's a feast. And he's like, hey, I can't eat this. I'm going to lose 50 pounds. It's like, dude.
There are a lot of guys that have been complaining about the food. Have you seen that?
I know. But like Joel Embiid did it. Am I crazy? He looked like he had a feast in front of him. He had chicken and salad and like a cheese plate, right? I mean,
yes.
Was I looking at the right picture? I'm like, damn, Joel. There are a lot of families that would take that, you know? And like, I understand that they have earned, they have a certain expectation about their lifestyle, okay? And they, for the most part, they have earned that. Successful people, wealthy people have, for the most part, earned that. Unless you're just part of the lucky sperm club, you've earned that. And I totally get it. But it's still bad optics. Like, it doesn't look good. You know, it's like, guys, just don't do that. And I think it's playful with Embiid because that's the way he is. But I just don't think it looks good. You're not, I don't know what he's looking for. Maybe he's just trying to have fun and doesn't care. But if you're looking to drum up sympathy, you ain't going to get it. Right? From people that look at that and go, cry me a river. I mean, they don't want to hear that.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? It's like the Blake Snell comments, Cap. Like,
they're out of touch.
They are. Like, we get it. I understand that he's looking out for himself. He's looking out for his family. It doesn't matter what he makes. That's what he's earned. Like, he is, that's what he's worth. But the optics of that kind of stuff for the common working man and woman in this country are bad. And so I just think, like, why bother with that, guys? You don't need to be doing that right now. Just
Black and Danny, I just said exactly what you said. You just said it more eloquently. And Black and Danny were all over me.
Well, listen. We don't always agree. What else can I say?
Yeah,
I just don't think it's a good look.
I completely
kind of the same way as the Snell comments. I view it kind of the exact same. We all kind of agreed. Like, Blake, what are you doing, man? You don't need to go down that road right now.
Yeah, just stop, Blake.
Yeah.
That's why I kept wondering, like, why would Tom Ricketts say biblical losses? Why would the owner of the Cardinals go, it's actually not profitable to own a baseball?
Right.
Why would Blake
Snell say,
like, just.
Yes.
If I was running either side, if I was Rob Manfred or I was Tony Clark, I'd be like, okay, gentlemen, here's the deal. Yeah. It's a, for the players, it's a $100,000 fine if you open your mouth. No interviews, shut up, and let me do my job. And the same thing with the owners.
It's crazy. And maybe I'm a hypocrite because we ask them to be honest and we want them to be forthright and tell us what you're feeling and thinking. But I just don't think that it's a good look for players there. You don't really win in that situation, I guess, is what I'm saying. So
completely agree.
What are you going to do? It's all crazy.
That's crazy. Anyway,
it's nuts.
What do you got coming up on your fine show?
James Fegan's going to join us at 1 from The Athletic to talk about Kopech and the White Sox and baseball's return. We'll talk about the Hawks hitting the ice. I mean, college football. If there's one thing that really seems like it's just not going to happen, it's the college football season. I think that's the one that, if you're ranking these, if we polled this, I think it'd be a runaway. What's the bother of polling it? College football is teetering on the brink, Cap, I think. Maybe these other leagues do successfully pull it off. You know, they've got a uniform, unified set of rules. It's one governing body, right, for each of these sports. It's a free-for-all in college athletics. We saw what the Big Ten and the Pac-12 did last week, and with everything that's going on in the South and the strongholds, really, for college football, I mean, how they're going to pull this off is beyond me. And, you know, there are two stories from over the weekend, one from The Ringer and one from The Athletic, that just do not paint a pretty picture about college football actually having a season. So
I think they play in the spring.
Yeah, but the problem is the Power 5 conferences don't want that because they feel like they're going to lose a lot of their guys. A lot of the top prospects then, a lot of guys, let's say in the top
Trevor
maybe
Lawrence
even 100,
is like, oh,
he's
I'm
done.
Gone.
Of course.
Right.
There's no way. Why would he play in the spring? There's just no way. And apparently, according to the Athletics article over the weekend, I think it was from yesterday, they reported that the conferences have quietly been asking the NFL to adjust its calendar, and the NFL has told them, go jump in the lake. No chance. It ain't happening. The draft will happen late in April. So I just, you know, I can't see how that's where it's most dire right now is for college football. And a lot of us love college football, and these college football programs for a lot of schools are like the economic engine. That's the cash flow. You know, and so what's it going to do to schools and programs? And it could really get ugly in college football.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was talking to Dan Wetzel on the phone the other day,
mm-hmm.
and he said, look, Northwestern's facility, which I don't know if you've seen it. I have.
The new one?
Yeah, it's insane. It might be the nicest facility in the country.
Yeah.
And Dan said, it might be the single best facility in the country. He goes, but that was, what, north of $100 million? He goes, they didn't just write a check. Here you go.
Yep.
They have debt service on that. They got to pay those bills.
And it's based on, you know, what the revenues, you know, that are generated through the Big Ten. And even for Northwestern, which, yeah, has a small stadium and might not have much of a gate. I mean, think about what the partnership with the Big Ten Network and the TV money means to all these schools. And you're absolutely right. They need that to help pay for that. So
absolutely crazy.
They got a pretty good endowment at Northwestern. I don't know if we have to worry about them too much. But a lot of schools could be, you know, could be faced with some very drastic financial ramifications, I guess. So
big time.
Yeah.
Well, all right, I'm going to get out of your way.
See you tomorrow.
Have a wonderful show. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Carmen and Yurko are coming up next. Thank you, Danny and Chris. Most importantly, thank you for listening. Keep it locked on ESPN 1000. We'll see you tomorrow.
See what Carmen and Yurko are talking about on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Welcome in, everybody. Hope you had a really nice weekend. Yurko's off this week. I'm flying solo today. Midway Jeff Meller will be in with me tomorrow. Chris Black a couple times later in the week. Chris is here now. So is Randy Merkin. Gentlemen, nice to see you. Good to be back after being off last week, following what's going on in the world of baseball and the world of sports as everything tries to come back. And let's face it, the news for White Sox fans wasn't great. It wasn't great on July 3rd when it was announced that Michael Kopech would not be starting the resumption of the season or the beginning of camp, you know, the summer camp with the White Sox. And Then a few days later, we get the news, or about a week later, I guess, we get the news that he has decided to take a pass on the 2020 season. And I'm not sure why. I don't know that anybody is. I thought Don Cooper's comments to the Sun-Times were a little bit of a head-scratcher, because it seemed to be that the majority of the reason here, or at least the reasoning, was that Michael Kopech wasn't sure about how he was going to be able to physically perform and hold up in such a crazy comeback. You know, no season. Spring training just ends because of the pandemic. No season. And whatever you're doing on the side or at home trying to stay in shape, it's obviously not the same when you're with the team, when you're with the trainers, when you're with the medical people, when you're with your coaching staff. And maybe he just felt like the quick ramp up to having to go out and pitch, even if it was just throwing three innings every 5 days, was going to be too stressful for his elbow and the reconstructive Tommy John surgery. And that's why he was deciding to take a pass. It was rumored for a little while, maybe not even rumored, but it was at least brought up in the media when we first learned of Michael Kopech's decision to stay away from camp, that, well, you know, he's battled anxiety and depression in the past, and could that have something to do with it? Then Don Cooper says to the Sun-Times over the weekend, "I don't know what's going on with Michael, but I know he deals with anxiety and depression, and my thought is I sure hope he's okay. I hope he gets to where he needs to be, where he's feeling good and where he wants to come back, because we will welcome him back with open arms. Last time I saw him in spring training, he was in a great place. But let me put it this way. I sure hope the kid is okay. I'm concerned that he's not okay." And it's like, wait a minute, what? Is he just worried about his elbow? Or is there something else going on? I mean, to say that, well, he's dealt with anxiety and depression, so... you know, that means it's leading to all these questions about his elbow. Any player that's coming back from Tommy John could worry about his elbow. Any young player with still a lot on the line, with a long career ahead of him, could worry about this restart, and it could have nothing to do with previous battles with anxiety and depression. Like, is he insinuating that that's why there are great concerns? Is it something else besides just medical concerns about the long-term stability of his body? Specifically his right arm, his right elbow. I was very surprised to hear Don Cooper put it in those blunt terms. And what does he know exactly? How much conversation has he had with Michael Kopech? I know Ricky Renteria was on the phone with him for an hour. I know Rick Hahn and various members in the White Sox organization, very high-ranking members of the White Sox organization, were in constant communication with him. And they have supported his decision to take this year off. But where's this coming from Don Cooper? If his reasoning, this is more from the Sun-Times, if his reasoning for not playing is because of a concern about the risk of injury in a three-week ramp-up period to a shortened season, as has been reported, it's news to Cooper. Quote, "I have not heard anything about that," Cooper said. "I've got nothing to say about that because it's been reported," quote unquote. "I want to hear it from Michael's mouth. I don't want to hear it from Michael's camp." Should White Sox fans be concerned here? That's the real question. 312-332-3776. You're concerned long-term about where Michael Kopech's head is, and is he going to be able to provide the full value that the White Sox expected when they made this trade? 312-332-ESPN. You can also hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Carmen DeFalco. Don't forget we're on Twitch, twitch.tv, streaming live. Just search ESPN 1000 Chicago. James Fegan, who covers the White Sox for the Athletic Chicago, is going to join us in about 35 minutes to tell us what he knows. He had a real detailed accounting this morning of how sort of the last week and a half have gone for Michael Kopech and the White Sox. The other question is, does he have any sort of responsibility to come back? We always ask this about Derrick Rose when Derrick was coming back from his ACL injury. Why would Derrick not come back and play? The team needs you right now. You're by far the team's best player. Maybe you could still be a contender, even though you would have come back very late in that season. Maybe you could have been a contender in the Eastern Conference. And we always wondered why, when an athlete is medically cleared to play, would he not come back? The situation here might be slightly different because this is an unprecedented time. Maybe there are some legitimate concerns physically for Michael Kopech, a guy coming back from Tommy John, and Tommy John takes longer to recover from than an ACL surgery obviously would require. But maybe there are some legitimate concerns. because this is a crazy restart. And maybe he just doesn't feel comfortable. He's afraid of what might happen to his arm and having to go through another procedure and losing even more time. But at what point does an athlete have a responsibility to his team? The White Sox seem to be very supportive, and that's good. I think that look good. That looks good. That's right. If he's mentally not ready, maybe you do run the risk of having a player that you could alienate or jeopardize. Maybe you shouldn't be throwing a player out there who is not mentally in the right frame of mind. So there are a few different questions on the table if you're concerned, and what's Michael Kopech's responsibility to this team? 312-332-3776. We also got information on the guy who won the big ticket that Cap was just talking about. Somebody on Twitter forwarded me his Twitter account. He's known as the Cash Out King, guys. He is at Cash Out King J. And this appears to be him. He's got the winning ticket here. Colin Morikawa is my hero. $1.1 million. What a bleeping rush. What a bleeping day. Love you all. He tweeted that 22 hours ago. It's pinned on his Twitter account. Chicago, Illinois. That's where his location is. Looks like he's got a YouTube channel, Randy. See if you can track down the Cash Out King. I'm guessing he's a pretty accomplished
veteran. Which gets me to a rant about the PGA Tour from yesterday.
I don't know if you
watched any of this yesterday.
I saw a little bit of the end. I saw the first playoff hole where Justin Thomas banged his drive way right and still salvaged to get to another hole. Morikawa didn't have a great drive on that hole either. But what's your problem with the PGA Tour?
So they decided to move tee times off because it was going to rain in the afternoon. So everyone was teed off by 8 o'clock Central Time.
Yeah.
Golf Channel carried coverage from 7 to 9, or maybe it was 8 to 10 a.m., and then they went away from it, okay? They went to Golf Central or whatever their pregame show is. We didn't, for 2 hours, no live golf.
Yeah, you can do it.
No, yeah, that PGA, but you have to pay for that. That's not free.
And then
at 12, CBS, you could go on CBS's app and watch that. But, like, what are you doing? Just show us, stay in the Golf Channel. I know they only are, I guess on Saturday and Sunday, they only get 2 hours, but come on.
Can't you make exceptions?
Right. Find a way to show us the freaking broadcast. You think people are, you know, I don't know if they're protecting their live broadcast from 2 to 5 with Jim Nantz and Nick Faldo, but, like, people are going to watch something if it's live, okay? So just show it to us live. It was a great finish, 3 holes. Colin Morikawa made a great putt. Justin Thomas makes a 54-footer with tons of break downhill, and then Morikawa has to hit a 24-footer downhill and makes it. They send it to another hole.
A lot of drama.
Yeah, I was disappointed. That was really
disappointing. Morikawa's got some game, man. The kid's going to win.
PGA Tour, man.
It frustrated me forever.
Did the golf from Tahoe, was that live?
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
That was live?
Yeah, that was live. Yeah, I had that.
Was that the celebrity one?
American Century Celebrity Championship.
Steph Curry, Patrick Mahomes.
So, Carm, listen to this. Steph Curry has a bet every year with his dad, Dell, who's a really good golfer as well.
Steph's like a scratch, right?
Steph is awesome, yeah. So, they do the modified Stableford scoring system. So it's like Eagles, 6 points.
So the higher, the better in that Stableford.
Right. Yes.
Steph gave his dad 6 points. At the start of the tournament.
6 points.
It came down. Del Curry was down 7 points, okay? And the last hole is a par five. He had an 8-footer to get him a point to tie Steph. And he made the putt.
Wow.
I mean, how good is that? That's pretty good odds.
So they pushed?
They pushed.
How about that? Yeah. Is Mahomes good?
Mahomes can drive it.
Yeah.
But he's not great around the green yet. Travis Kelce was playing with him. He's pretty rotten.
We could play with those guys.
Yeah. Mahomes on a normal course would probably, I'm guessing, would shoot low 80s, high 70s.
They're that good.
They're that good.
Yeah. But like Eddie George, I think, had the highest number. I think he was like minus 69, which is terrible. Barkley was in last place and the final hole birdied. So he ended up, I think, second to last.
They're good. Like those guys, like Mahomes and Kelce, they're good enough to be involved in all this, but they wouldn't embarrass us.
Right.
Like, we could still, like, they would shoot probably better than we do, but.
Right. But we can run with them for a little while.
Yeah, like, we could all have a nice round with them.
Like, Steph would smoke us. Steph's a scratch.
The winner was Marty Fish. You know who Marty Fish is?
Marty Fish.
Tennis player,
yeah.
Got his highest ranking as 7th. He, on Saturday, broke the record. He had 37 points. He had 10 birdies. He broke the course record, which Lee Trevino had He shot a 63.
So he's pretty good.
He's really good.
Yeah, we couldn't run with Marty.
And shout out to Marty Fish because he went about it. He just drove the cart by himself.
Did he really?
He chose not have a caddy.
No caddy.
And he just took the cart.
And he still eviscerated her.
Yeah, it was great.
That's pretty good.
You know, so he's walking up to the green with his own putter and his sand wedge, and he holds everything himself. Like that's my guy.
That's pretty good. All right, when we come back, more baseball stuff. Some Theo from Friday. Great conversation he had with Waddle and Sylvie. John Lester on the 60-game season. And again, Michael Kopech and the White Sox situation. And if you're a little concerned right now, considering Kopech's history and everything that's sort of being rumored out there in the media right now, if you think this could be something that lingers long-term, is it something mental? Is it more than just his arm? And do the White Sox really need Michael Kopech to fire if they're truly going to win the Chris Sale trade? 312-332-3776. We're coming right back.
Get Carmen and Yurko pods on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Theo Epstein over the weekend, or actually Friday, with Waddle and Sylvie, a lot of great thoughts about this season. Is it going to be able to be played in full? The DH potentially sticking in the National League. Want to play all that coming up, plus John Lester on the 60-game season. Tracy's in Naperville on ESPN 1000. Hey, Tracy.
Yes, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm all right for old man. The reason why I'm calling is about Kopech, and I'm going to give you a little background about myself, and it doesn't make a difference. But my dad's a Hall of Famer in the Negro League. He played with Satchel Paige.
Nice.
So I grew up baseball pretty much.
Yep.
But my question is could Kopech possibly be another Trubisky? I mean, I'm not downing the guy, but you know, sometimes it takes people a little longer to develop.
Well, we don't know what the heck Kopech is, and it's not because it's taking him too long to develop. It's because he's going to go 2 years without pitching now. By the way, who's your dad?
His name is Bill McCrary, McCrary. He was in the Cubs and the Yankees farm system back in like 1945-46.
Great. That's great, Tracy. Thank you for calling, too. To me, it's not like Trubisky. It's not like taking too long to develop. It's that Michael Kopech is going to go 2 years without pitching. He missed all of 2019 because he came up late in the year in 2018, was exciting all of us that are White Sox fans, has Tommy John surgery, misses all of last year, and now he's going to sit out this 2020. The only benefit, truly, is that he's not going to accrue any service time. I mean, that'd be like a double whammy for the White Sox, but that's not going to be the case here. He's not going to accrue any service time by not playing this year because he is not deemed high risk. If you had some sort of underlying condition, you're an MLB player, and you decide this is not worth it, I'm going to skip the year, you'd still accrue your year of service time that was agreed to back in March when the owners did give that to the players, the one nice gesture they made all offseason. Michael Kopech is not in the high-risk category. So he will not accrue service time. He will not earn a salary. That's the only real benefit. What's he going to look like when he comes back after not having pitched for 2 years? Who knows? If it protects his arm from future damage, that's a good thing for the White Sox, I suppose. But I don't know how you gauge that either and how you accurately can predict or retroactively tell if the time off did him any good. I can't wait to see him. And I think it stinks for this year because, believe it or not, I think the White Sox have a chance, if they can complete this 60-game season, to maybe sneak into the playoffs. And I'll take it. I don't care. I really don't, 60 games or not. If they could have played into October and made the playoffs as a White Sox fan, I'll still take it, obviously. I mean, what can I say? I've seen my team play in the playoffs in the last 15 years, or since the World Series anyway, since 2005, one time. They made the playoffs in 2008. I don't care if it's a 60-game season. I don't think John Lester cares if it's a 60. Go ahead, Chris. You wanted to say something?
Well, I was just thinking with Kopech, and you look at the season, 60 games, you have five starters, so you don't necessarily need him. from opening day.
Are we counting Gio Gonzalez as one of the five starters?
At the moment, right? So how many starts would the Sox realistically be looking at for Kopech in this shortened season? Eight?
I mean, you're really only
seven
talking
or eight
about
starts,
maybe 10.
Maybe 10?
Right.
Which would have been dynamic as we head towards the playoffs. Like, what a weapon that could be if they got in a playoff series and they could give you Giolito, Keuchel, and then a surprise of Kopech being the guy to, like, finish off a series. Like, that would have been really cool. So I'm with you. Like, it was something to be excited for. But for all intents and purposes, we're looking at a handful of starts in this season, which would have been good for his development. But it's not like the end of the world. I'm disappointed as a Sox fan, but there could be far worse things. Like, he could be injured.
Right.
That would
be
a major problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can only imagine, right? He comes back and in the third start, something happens again. That'd be disastrous for them. This way, at least, you know, he should be fully ready to go come spring training 2021. Do both have to fire? You know, do both really have to hit in order for the sale trade to be considered or deemed successful? Or if Moncada is a superstar, is that good enough? Like, if Moncada is the guy we really saw last year, and who knows, maybe even continues to get a little bit better. He's like 24, right? I mean, is that good enough if just one of the two is truly great?
In hindsight, it might be, just because what's Chris Sale's health going forward?
Yeah, very good question.
What did we hear while he was here with the White Sox?
He's always going to get hurt.
And the crazy mechanics of his arm and that elbow flying out and the way he kind of whips it towards the plate. Like, there's going to be issues there at some point. So I kind of feel like right now, if Moncada turns into an all-star level player or close to that, or every other season he's making all-star appearances and he's putting up those numbers, you might look back and just say that might have been enough for Chris Sale.
Like, as good as Chris Sale was those first 2 years for Boston, and he was great, and he helped them win a World Series in 18, even though he was not as much of a factor maybe down the stretch in the playoffs because he dealt with an injury going back to late in the year of 2018. As great as he was, it wasn't a great year last year. Now he's had Tommy John himself. Maybe after all the years of, oh, he's bound to get hurt. He never really did. I mean, he had the brief stints here and there, but he never had the catastrophic shoulder or elbow injury. Maybe now it's all catching up and he'll never be truly healthy for the Red Sox. But that's the other part of the equation. Like, with Kopech, we always have assumed, well, he's got to be really good because this is what you got for Chris Sale. Don't forget, Moncada is a huge part of that, and maybe that's good enough. Bisabi was a part of that too, and some people still think down the line he'll factor into the White Sox in the big league club. 312-332-3776 if you have thoughts on it. Here's John Lester on the 60-game season.
You know, it's going to be a quick sprint, you know. 60 games is not a lot in baseball, and I know you guys have seen it. I've seen it. Guys can be hot for 15, 20 days, and that can change a season or change this season, let's say. You know, it'll definitely be a fun season and unique, you know, if we can get this thing going and get off and on the right foot and hopefully, you know, kind of sprint here towards these playoffs.
Fun and unique, and he would say to The Athletic over the weekend, a trophy is a trophy. And I would view it the same way, again, especially as a fan of a team that doesn't go to the postseason, that went in 2008 and hasn't been back since. Like, that sucks. When you're a baseball fan, you got to go a decade plus without seeing your team in the playoffs. So, yeah, I'll take it. 60 games, fine. You want to put an asterisk next to it, so be it. But I'll sit back and I'll still enjoy it. All right, when we come back, I want to play Theo Epstein on the 60-game season, and will it be a meaningful title? We'll play you what Theo thought about that with Waddle and Sylvie from Friday night when we come back next. Plus, we'll do some trending. And then in 15 minutes, we'll talk to James Fegan. He covers the White Sox for The Athletic. We'll get his opinion on Kopech and what White Sox fans should expect going forward. We're coming right back. This hour of the show is brought to you by Studio 41. Home design showrooms are open to everyone, homeowners, contractors, designers, and architects. For locations, visit shopstudio41.com.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Carmen and Yurko with you at home or in your office.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
You know, maybe if you're the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Cardinals, hey, even the Cubs in their recent history, let's face it, pretty unbelievable run, 15, 16, 17, 18. Maybe you'd say, 60-game season, who cares? It's not worth it. Hey, it's worth it to me as a White Sox fan. It's been 11 years since the White Sox were in the playoffs. 11 years. And in that decade plus, they've only finished better than second two times. You know, or I should say they finished better than third. They didn't win the division. They finished second twice. They finished better than third only twice. I'll take it. Here was Theo Epstein with Waddle and Sylvie. Great conversation from Friday. If you miss any of the interviews, download the ESPN Chicago app. You can catch up on all the shows and get all the interviews. But this is Theo. Will a 60-game season be a meaningful title?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't speak for everybody else, but there is kind of a consensus brewing in our camp that, you know, when we were contemplating this type of arrangement and when we were getting ready to report and making all the arrangements, I think if you ask the typical member of the Cubs organization, whether it was player or front office, there would have been some skepticism about is this legitimate? Is the World Series champion going to be as special? Will championship be as meaningful this year as it's been in the past? And then now that we're here and we're seeing just how much hard work and teamwork and discipline and care goes into pulling this off and just having a chance to compete, let alone to prosper and thrive and ultimately win, I think we all feel like maybe the trophy should be even bigger this year because, you know, the team that can withstand all this, you know, first of all, it won't just be 26 guys or 30 guys. It'll be, you know, the whole community, the whole organization, and really the whole community around them and the hard work of everyone across the industry, allowing the game to go on. But it's going to take a lot extra to compete and to prosper at a high level this year. So, yeah, I think it's very legitimate despite some of the differences.
If anything, it's going to be harder. I kind of agree with what Theo is saying. It's going to be harder, not going to be easier. Now, is the data sample the same? No. You know, how you view regular season statistics at the end of the year, hey, that's up to each individual person. If someone hits 400, what I think it's as impressive as Ted Williams hitting 400 over the span of what they play back then, probably that year was probably still 155 games back then, right? You know, is it as impressive? Of course it's not. I mean, I understand that it's not the same thing. But when it comes to just winning that trophy, it could be even harder. What if a star player goes down? You don't have him for 3 weeks. I mean, there are so many different crazy variables that could go into this. It's not going to be any easier to win a title this year. So I'll take it as a fan. Merck, let's do some trending real quick. Tell everybody what's popping on social media. We do it this time each and every day. We call it What's Trending.
By the way, what about like for MVP? Like, you know, say someone gets off to a slow start. Then, you know,
you're almost buried,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's crazy.
That's my play on my Bryce Harper play. You know, he's like 12 to 1, 14 to 1 for MVP.
Bryce, that's a good play.
He always gets off to good starts.
Right.
Now, it's not April and May, but like he normally kills April and May.
Right.
You know, and then he slows down later in the year. Maybe he doesn't like the heat. So maybe the argument is, well, he's not going to be any good, Carm, because he doesn't like August, and it's August. I don't know. But it's just my one theory on Harper. And if anything, he gets off to a good 3-4 weeks. You could sell that ticket on PropSwap. That's my point, because his odds are going to drop considerably.
Could anyone sneak in the AL and steal it from Trout? Since it's a small sample size?
How about this, Chris? How about Jorge Soler, who hates April and May, who stinks because it's freezing?
Hold on, is he in the Royals?
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, Merck, but you're only talking about 60 games.
I know, but
didn't he hit like 38 home runs or something?
What if
last
he goes
year?
Out? What if he hit 48 last year, I
okay,
think, right?
Yeah, I was
what,
10 off.
What if he
That's
goes out?
What if the Royals are 20 and you can't give a guy whose team is 20 games under 500? Yeah,
how are the Royals going to be 20 games under 500 with 60 games?
You only got 60 games, Merck. Didn't Andre Dawson win on a last place team?
He did. And my friend tried to keep my friend on Cameo trying to convince him that he didn't deserve it. We played that way. It was the Hawks' birthday on Friday.
That was awesome. Yeah. Well, but Merck, what happens if he goes out and he hits 30 home runs in 60 games?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You got to be on
saying.
A good team.
But you know what? But you know why you buy those futures tickets now? That's why PropSwap is so good. And
right.
I don't just say it because they're a sponsor. It really is genius.
Yes.
That's why it is so good. You're playing it like a stock. And if you buy Jorge Soler now, and he's probably, I don't know, I'm guessing 20 to 1, and Jorge Soler hits 15 home runs in the first 3 weeks of the season, and all of a sudden he's 8 to 1, he's 6 to 1, you say, hey, I'll sell it. I don't know. It's just something to think about. All right, Merck, what's happening?
All right, the Washington Redskins are no more. The team officially retired its Redskins name and logo.
I mean,
today.
It's about time. To anybody that would suggest, well, it's political correctness. Redskin is a slur. Period. End of story. I mean, can you imagine? In this day and age, still the it is a slur. The Indians finally a couple years ago were smart enough to at least get rid of that ridiculous mascot. Oh, it's political correctness. Run amok. It was a caricature with the big teeth and the eye of the feather. Are you kidding? What year are we living in here? That anybody could possibly be upset that these teams have finally realized the error of their ways. Now, does it get us into the Blackhawks discussion? We don't have time for that now. Let's do it after 1 o'clock, after we talk to James Fegan. Scott Powers wrote a great article about that a couple weeks ago, by the way. Do the Hawks have to finally look at this deeper? The Hawks have avoided a lot of the controversy that has surrounded the Cleveland Indians and the Washington Redskins over the years because they're named after someone that is a significant figure in Native American history. Chief Blackhawk fought, albeit against the United States on the British side, during the War of 1812. He is an honored and revered member. I believe it's of the Sauk Nation, if I'm not mistaken. That's the one here from the Midwest. And the Army troop, as I understand it, that the owner, McLaughlin, I want to say was the name, when he bought the Blackhawks and moved it from the old Western Hockey League to here to Chicago, he was part of, in World War I, the Army division, I think it was, that he was in, was called the Blackhawk Division. It was named after Chief Blackhawk. It is named after someone of great historical significance. That still doesn't mean it's right. And if the Blackhawks, under mounting pressure or just because they felt like it was the right thing to do someday, decided to change the logo and maybe just call themselves the Hawks and tweak the logo, so be it. But anybody that would suggest that it's political correctness run amok, that the Redskins are finally getting rid of that ridiculous name, it's crazy to me that anybody would still rant against that. I don't know. Am I wrong? Redskin? It's a slur. What else, Merck?
Do they get rid of Hail to the Redskins, the theme song, or do they,
I think they're going to do away with all of that, aren't they? They've said no more Native American imagery. I think they're doing away with all of it. Any word on what the name's going to be?
I have not. I've heard Warriors is potential.
Chris, did you guys say Monuments was one that was being floated around?
Cap said that, yeah. Okay. Warriors is in the consideration. I've also seen Red Tails, which would give a nod to a flight squadron back from, I think, World War One or Two.
Okay.
Which would be cool. And I've also seen some traction for Red Wolves.
Red Wolves.
Which I think would be pretty cool as well.
You keep the red in there and it's not offensive anymore.
And I've also seen, Merck, if you ask about the song, I've seen people changing the lyrics to then fit either Red Tails or Red Wolves or whatever they're doing. So it'd still be Hail to the
Red,
and then it would
wing,
replace whatever you're going to do for the mascot. It would replace it in with the correct type of language to go along with it.
So there you go. If you've got a thought on it, 312-332-3776. We've got plenty of time during the 1 o'clock hour to take your calls on that. Maybe we'll circle back to how this impacts the Blackhawks going forward. I want to talk about the Hawks hitting the ice, too. We got to bring that up. James Fegan from The Athletic will join us in about 5-10 minutes. We'll talk about Michael Kopech and the White Sox return to action. Plus, coming up next, could a former Chicago Bear be the new owner of the New York Mets? It's possible. We'll explain. We're back in just 2 minutes.